Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. On the front page of the Gazette today, Muslim students break fast with iftar in Iowa City. Students lead Evening of Faith, Fellowship, and Inclusion during Ramadan by Grace King, the Gazette. Iowa City West High School sophomore Mohammed El-Sayed led dozens of his peers and community members in prayer after they broke their daily fast with dates and water in the fourth week of Ramadan on Tuesday night. The iftar, the breaking of fast during Ramadan, was the first event of its kind at the high school organized by students in the Arab Student Union of West High and Miriam Girls Club, a Muslim youth club for girls in Iowa City and surrounding areas. Leading prayer for a group that large was unlike anything I've ever experienced, El-Sayed said. It brings me happiness. Ramadan is the most holy time of year for the Muslims, marking the historic time of on the lunar calendar when they believe God revealed to the Prophet Muhammad the Quran, Islam's holy book. During Ramadan, which follows the lunar cycle and begins and ends on a different day each year, Muslims fast from dawn until sunset each day, even abstaining from water. El-Sayed said his faith means everything to him. I don't think I'd be here without prayer. Everything in my life starts with prayer, he said. Following the prayer, more than 120 people in attendance dined together on food brought by around 40 volunteers. Attendees included Iowa City Schools Superintendent Matt Digner, West High Principal Mitch Gross, and some school board members. A lot of the food was authentic cuisine from Arabic countries, like stuffed grape leaves made by Shad Suleiman, 16, a sophomore at West High. Ramadan is my favorite time of the year, Suleiman said. I try hard to learn more about the people and the prophets and to emulate them. Suleiman said her whole life revolved around her faith. As is required in the Muslim faith, she prays five times a day. It helps her feel grounded, she said. At school, there are two offices that are dedicated prayer rooms for Muslim students to use. Suleiman said the Iftar Tuesday was a chance to be in a community with other Muslims and educate non-Muslims about their religion. Suleiman said she feels that West High is fairly inclusive, but that isn't true everywhere. A new Pew Research Center survey reports that 7 in 10 Muslims have felt an increase in discrimination since the Israel-Hamas war began in October. The share of U.S. students who say there is a lot of discrimination against Muslims in the U.S. is 44%, according to the survey. The survey was conducted in February among a nationally representative sample of about 12,600 U.S. adults. You will face prejudices. It can be hard sometimes, Suleiman said. Jinan Abudaga, 17, a junior at West High, agrees that West High feels inclusive. Hosting the iftar for her peers makes my heart swell, she said. It's really amazing to see my non-Muslim friends share this moment with me, even though they don't observe Ramadan. They get to see a little part of my life, Abudaga said. Minna Abdallah, 16, a sophomore at West High, said she feels grateful to be able to fast during Ramadan. It's a time when she feels more closely connected to God and His mercy. Zaina Mohammed, 16, a sophomore at Iowa City Liberty High School, said Ramadan is about letting go of worldly desires and strengthening her faith. Ahmed El-Sheikh, 18, a senior at West High, said there's a misconception that Islam is violent. Contrary to that stereotype, Islam advocates for nonviolence and peace. El-Sheikh said he likes the vibes during Ramadan. It's a time when his family peacefully eats together. He's learning to detach himself from material objects and rely on God. Viana Kadora, founder and director of the Miriam Girls Club, and Ramadan is a time to root out any evilness, increase good deeds, pray and leave the month more purified and more knowledgeable in your faith. Fasting is a physical aspect, but it's about cleansing yourself spiritually, said Kadora Suleiman's mother. Muslim students in the school often feel alienated, Kadora said. Hosting a community iftar is a way to begin breaking down bigotry, she said, and she hopes it start to better visibility and inclusion of Muslim people in the community. With much work, we can build a better, stronger community, Kadora said. God in the Holy Book said, we created you different nations and different tribes. He did not say, I created you Muslim. It's not about faith. It's about humankind. Also on the front page, majority of Mercy's liquidation earmarked for bondholders. Mercy Iowa City reserves the right to change or discontinue the pension plan, by Vanessa Miller, The Gazette, Iowa City. Facing objections from pensioners and other entities owed millions in unsecured claims, a bankrupt Mercy Iowa City, with attorneys burning through thousands by the hour, have negotiated a proposal for how to distribute the hospital's limited resources. The proposed Chapter 11 liquidation plan, filed with the bankruptcy court Friday after much behind-the-scenes posturing, includes a liquidation analysis showing Mercy projected between $62.7 million and $78.6 million available as of the end of January to pay those it owes money. The net cash available for distribution includes $26.7 million in estimated proceeds from a $28 million sale to the University of Iowa, which has continued to operate the former Mercy as its new UI Healthcare downtown campus. It also includes Mercy's $15 million in cash and cash equivalents, but subtracts an estimated $3 million for attorney fees in 2024 alone, with millions more in attorney fees still pending objection from the acting U.S. trustee overseeing the case. Bondholder Preston Hollow Community Capital and Master Trustee CompuShare, which Mercy blamed for its bankruptcy, cited their destructive behavior late last summer to publicly out its financial woes, have filed a secured claim for $62.8 million of the available resources, inclusive of attorney fees. The liquidation plan indicates Preston Hollow and CompuShare could recoup up to 96% of that claim, while a group of hundreds of businesses and other entities that have filed a combined $38.4 million in unsecured claims could get just 8 to 10% of their money due, documents show, or 8 to 10 cents on the dollar. Additionally, former Mercy employees who participated in its nearly 50-year-old pension plan before the hospital froze new participation in 2017 and who have filed claims worth $21.5 million in retirement funds also could recoup just 8 to 10%. As of June 30, 2023, actuaries estimated the pension plan was underfunded, reporting $117.5 million in assets and $141.1 million in long-term liabilities. Language in the proposal seeking court approval notes Mercy Hospital reserves the right to change or discontinue the pension plan at any time. Objections. In response to a first version of Mercy's liquidation plan proposed at the end of February, several groups filed objections, including the Committee of Unsecured Creditors, Mercy's former managing partner, Mercy One of Des Moines, and the acting U.S. trustee monitoring the case. The plan is fatally flawed and patently unconfirmable on its face, according to an objection from an unsecured creditor, one of four filed March 25th. It would therefore be a colossal waste of time and estate resources for the court to approve the disclosure statement and permit Mercy to solicit acceptances of and pursue hopeless attempt at confirmation of the plan. Among the creditors' complaints were accusations Mercy, through its plan, improperly favored Preston Hollow and CompuShare by assuming their $62 million claim was secured and by limiting options of those with unsecured claims. The plan may not eviscerate the committee's challenge rights, according to the objection, and any and all claims against Mercy's current and former directors and officers, especially those based on prepetition acts or omissions, must be preserved for the benefit of Mercy's estates and creditors. The plan, according to unsecured creditors, also discriminates unfairly in its disparate treatment of pension claims and general unsecured claims by providing the pension claims with an additional $250,000 of recoveries. The plan, according to the objection, fails to provide an explanation for its disparate treatment of pension claims and general unsecured claims, although they are each general unsecured claims that are equal in priority under the bankruptcy code. Plus, the creditors want more information about the backroom discussions that resulted in the proposal, especially given the discord at the start of the case between the two now collaborators, the bankrupt hospital and its bondholder and trustee. The disclosure statement lacks sufficient details regarding the terms of the plan, support agreement, and its negotiations, according to the objection. Creditors are entitled to better understand the nature and origin of the plan support agreement before voting on the plan. Secured. Creditors argue the $62 million claim from Preston Hollow and CompuShare should be downgraded from its secured status because the bondholders breached a confidentiality agreement with Mercy, causing damage to Mercy Hospital's reputation and business and significant and negative destruction of value that harmed all of Mercy's stakeholders. In making this assertion, the unsecured creditors committee used against Mercy an argument the hospital first posited against Preston Hollow and CompuShare, with which it is now collaborating on a liquidation deal. In an August declaration from Mercy's chief restructuring officer, Mark Toney, he accused the bondholder of blanketing the media, Mercy's contractors, and elected officials with false, disparaging statements about Mercy Hospital and its board of directors. It is uncontroverted that the careless and callous actions taken by Preston Hollow jeopardized the health and well-being of Mercy Hospital's patients, the viability of Mercy Hospital's future, and damaged the organization's reputation, all resulting in significant and negative destruction of value for all of Mercy Hospital's stakeholders, including Preston Hollow. The Unsecured Creditors Committee in March, leapfrogging off Mercy's own accusations, sought to downgrade the bondholder and master trustee's secure claim through equitable subordination due to Preston Hollow's engaging in egregious, gross, and inequitable conduct by spreading false statement and disparaging remarks about Mercy Hospital, its board, and its management team, and publicly disclosing and disseminating confidential information in breach of confidentiality agreement, resulting in injury and damages to Mercy and conferring an unfair advantage on Preston Hollow. Amendments. Following those objections, Mercy late last week filed a revised liquidation plan including concessions, like a cap on the amount bondholders can pay attorneys from Mercy's estate and a caveat, ensuring processes from any lawsuits, including claims involving the underfunded pension plan, will be split 40% to the bondholders and 60% to the liquidation trust, through which creditor distributions can be made. The plan designated $26.2 million of the UI sale proceeds would go to bondholders representing their initial cut of recoveries, and a bankruptcy judge Tuesday approved that distribution, with the Unsecured Creditors Committee having withdrawn its objection. As soon as practicable following the entry of this order, Mercy shall remit sale proceeds in the amount of $26.2 million to the master trustee for the benefit of bondholders. As for pensioners, in addition to an earmarked $250,000, the liquidation plan designates an advance distribution that has yet to be negotiated for that group. Although it will be no bigger of a final recovery percentage than the rest of the general unsecreditors get. A final hearing where a judge will hear the liquidation plan is set for May 16th. And also on the front page, Iowa lawmakers advance bill to help Boy Scout abuse victims. Legislators face deadline so supervisors may receive a better settlement, by Tom Barton, Gazette, Des Moines Bureau, Des Moines. Senate lawmakers advanced a bill Wednesday that would lift Iowa's statute of limitations on civil claims on sex abuse to allow survivors of sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts of America in the state to take full advantage of bankruptcy proceedings against the organization. Lawmakers have been facing a ticking clock. Iowa has 1 year from the effective date of the settlement trust by April 19th to change the law, or else Iowa survivors will receive less than others across the country, according to an attorney involved in the matter. That means lawmakers must pass, and Governor Kim Reynolds must sign the bill into law before then for survivors to receive the larger amount. Senate Study Bill 3197 unanimously passed Wednesday out of the three-member Senate subcommittee. It now heads to the full Senate Appropriations Committee. The bill temporarily would lift the state's statute of limitations so that victims of the Boy Scouts can receive damages from the Boy Scout Settlement Trust, a $2.7 billion fund that was established last year after the Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy protection. Settlement involves over 82,000 abuse victims. The Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy in 2020 after several states enacted laws letting accusers sue over decades-old abuse allegations. The organization ultimately reached a settlement, approved in court in 2022, that would pay abuse victim amounts ranging from $3,500 to $2.7 million. The settlement involves more than 82,000 men who said they were abused as children by troop leaders. That fund, the largest of its kind in U.S. history to settle sexual abuse claims, began distributing payments last fall to victims. But unless Iowa legislators take action in the next few weeks, the estimated 300 to 350 Iowans involved in the settlement will receive a fraction of the awards that they would be entitled to. When figuring victims' compensation, the settlement uses a matrix that weighs a variety of factors, including different states' civil statutes of limitations. Iowa's statute of limitations requires victims of child sexual abuse to file cases in district courts by the age of 19 or within 4 years of coming to the realization as an adult that their injuries and suffering are related to their alleged abuse. Because of Iowa's short statute of limitations for filing lawsuits related to child sexual abuse, victims in Iowa could see their financial compensation from the Scouts reduced by 60% to 70% compared with victims in other states, said Gillian Dumas, an Oregon attorney who is appealing the national settlement agreement and represents an Iowan who has filed claim in the bankruptcy. Report: average age for disclosure of child sexual abuse is 52. Data from the U.S. Department of Justice suggests that 86% of child sexual abuse goes unreported altogether. When victims do report, the average age of disclosure for child sexual abuse is 52, according to a March 2020 report by Child USA, a national think tank for child protection. As a result, a $600,000 claim would be worth only $180,000 simply because it happened in Iowa, Dumas said. And even then, people might only be paid 5 to 10% of the value because there's not enough money in the fund, Dumas said. What would Iowa bill do? The Senate bill, modeled after legislation passed in Alabama, creates an exception to Iowa's civil statute of limitations for injuries resulting from childhood sexual abuse for purposes of making a claim in a bankruptcy proceeding that was initiated on February 18, 2020, against the bankruptcy estate of a congressionally chartered organization. The language would effectively limit the exception to victims of abuse in the Boy Scouts. The legislation, if signed into law, would take effect immediately and apply retroactively to injuries resulting from sex offense barred due to expiration of the statute of limitations. The act would be repealed December 31st, 2026. Some call for statute to be lifted permanently. Amy Campbell, a lobbyist representing the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, said the group supports the bill but would like to see the civil statute of limitations lifted for everyone. Supporters say lifting the law would allow more people to come forward and report abuse while also holding organizations accountable. Opponents have expressed concerns that getting rid of statutes would make it difficult for organizations to defend themselves against decades-old cases. Iowa officials in 2021 lifted the state's statute of limitations for bringing criminal charges in sexual abuse, incest, sexual exploitation, and human trafficking cases, but the law does not cover civil claims. Senator Janet Peterson of Des Moines, Democrat, who has advocated for eliminating the statute of limitations and creating a revival window for survivors to file claims and receive 100% of damages, applauded efforts to ensure hundreds of Boy Scout abuse victims in Iowa are not shortchanged. Peterson said she will continue to push to get rid of the civil statute of limitations on sexual abuse. She thanked survivors for coming forward. I know how extremely painful and difficult it is to share their stories with lawmakers and to put their trust in us that we will try to do something to make sure they are not shortchanged from the violence that they endured as children, said Peterson, who served on the subcommittee and voted to advance the bill. The system failed them as children, and let's try to make sure that it doesn't fail them as grown-ups. Bill sponsor and Senate Appropriations Committee Chair Tim Krayenbrink, Republican, Fort Dodge, said he anticipated passing the bill out of committee today with a technical amendment and sending it to the full Senate for quick passage. This is our shot, and we need to get it done quickly, said Krayenbrink, who has met with Iowa survivors, including Joe Gargano of Fort Dodge. Gargano, 67, said he was sexually abused when he was a Boy Scout in Iowa around the age of 10. He said his lawyer told him about the Iowa law that would stand in the way of his full payout and has pushed for a fix ahead of the impending deadline. Reynolds told reporters Wednesday she's open to supporting the bill and willing to take a look at it as it works its way through the legislative process. My overall goal is to find a sense of justice for those who have been violated, Krayenbrink told reporters. I don't think there's enough justice to give them, you know, for what they probably endured. But I think this would help make things right. Caleb McCullough and Aaron Murphy of the Gazette Lee Des Moines Bureau contributed to this report. On the Iowa Today page, Reynolds proclaims UI Women's Wrestling Day. Honor comes as part of annual Hawkeye Caucus Day at Capitol by Vanessa Miller, the Gazette Des Moines. After committing to visit the first ever Hawkeye Women's Wrestling Room, maybe not to get on the mat herself as a head coach, Clarissa Chun suggested, but to learn more about the sport and some of the moves, Governor Kim Reynolds made a proclamation Wednesday honoring the team. Whereas the Iowa women's wrestling team began competition during its 2023-24 inaugural season, and whereas the Iowa women's wrestling team won the National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Tournament on March 9, 2024, bringing home the national championship title, 6 individual national championships, and 12 All-Americans for a historic end to its first ever season, I, Kim Reynolds, Governor of the State of Iowa, do hereby proclaim April 3, 2024, as University of Iowa Women's Wrestling Day. The proclamation came at the start of the UI's annual Hawkeye Caucus Day at the Capitol in Des Moines, where students, staff, and faculty convened in the rotunda to show off to elected officials and visitors the research, outreach, impact, honors, and awards they've received. UI President Barbara Wilson and some of her administrative team were on site for the event, highlighting the partnership aspect of the university as a public institution facing government oversight and taking legislative appropriations. Just under a giant blow-up herky mascot pumping its fist was a table for the Big Ten Championship Trophy won by the Hawkeye women's basketball team, still chasing the bigger NCAA title, and the women's wrestling team trophy from that program's ascent to the national championships. Reynolds, in chatting with Chun, assistant coaches Tony Verbeek and Gary Maeb, and wrestlers included Iowa natives Ella Schmidt and Felicity Taylor, noted the attention on female athletes now and the boundaries they're breaking down. You learned in big time and really made an impact, Reynolds said. It's so inspiring. As the first women's wrestling squad at the NCAA Division I Power 5 conference school, the Hawkeye women went undefeated in dual competitions in their first season and captured the NWCA Nationals duels title January 6th. But it wasn't all a slam dunk, as Reynolds noted in praising them for their perseverance. The Cardinals led by 17 points going into the finals, Reynolds said, of the Division III Illinois-based North Central College, which was ranked number one at the recent national championships ahead of the Hawkeyes after winning the national title last season. And you ended up winning 204-198. That's determination. Chun and the athletes said they focused on bringing their best to each match. Well, you did, Reynolds said, asking about the upcoming Olympic trials before Chun could sneak in her question about getting the governor on the mat. I can't imagine everything that would entail, the governor said, conceding. That would be fun. As an Iowa State University graduate, Reynolds said told the Gazette after making her proclamation about the Hawkeye women's wrestling program that she expects more universities to follow. It takes somebody to step in, and especially with the great success that they've had this year, I would be surprised if we don't see more of that happening in the colleges and universities, she said. That's what's great about somebody stepping in and leading. Sharing successes. Outside of the governor's office, Kate Giannini a program manager for UI-based IIHR, a hydroscience-based research, education, and service center that for years has been tackling water-related issues regionally and beyond, waited for elected officials or anyone else interested in its work to stop by her table. It's really about meeting with our decision makers and letting them know how we're serving Iowa and using their funds and being able to tell them about the cool research that we're doing and projects that we're doing measuring floods and droughts, as we've been stuck in a drought for a while, Giannini said. Her table typically gets 15 to 20 visitors. ISU held its annual Day at the Capitol first on February 20th, featuring an innovation and impact theme. Through a delegation of 40-plus faculty, staff, and students, the Ames campus featured 18 programs from its veterinary diagnostic lab to its mental health first aid program. The University of Northern Iowa, about a month ago, on March 5th, held its Day at the Capitol, calling it an opportunity to engage students in statewide advocacy. UNI Day at the Capitol is also another opportunity for our UNI students, government leaders, to advocate for their needs for their fellow students, UNI President Mark Nook said. It was my pleasure to once again join UNI students, faculty, and staff in advocating for UNI at the Capitol. Among the UI programs featured were those from its College of Law, Education, and Engineering. Its graduate college was on hand, along with its fundraising arm, the UI Center for Advancement and UI Athletics Department. That is the UI Athletics fundraising branch raising money, among other things, projects like new wrestling facility and gymnastics and spirit squad training center, the UI Athletics Development Department. It's been really great so far, UI graduate student and athletes intern Kaylin King said of the opportunity Wednesday to promote ways in which Hawkeye athletes have benefited the state, especially recently through its women's program. We have our women's wrestling trophy here and our women's basketball trophy, she said. We've had lots of people take pictures with the trophy, of course. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for April 4th, Thursday, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Stephen C. Chamberlain, 62, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on March 29th, 2024. A celebration of life will take place at a later date. Karen Lucille Rolina, 84, of Fairfax, passed away on April 3, 2024, at the Winslow House Care Center, Marion. Visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, April 7, 2024, at Brosh Chapel and the AVA Center in Cedar Rapids, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Celebration of Life service will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 8, 2024, at Brush Chapel. Burial will be in Czech National Cemetery. Bernice Ann Brooks, 101, of the Methwick community, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, died Friday, March 29, 2024. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, April 9, 2024, from 10:30 a.m. to 11 a.m., with a funeral service to follow at 11 a.m. at Cedar Memorial Funeral Home, Chapel of Memories in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, with Pastor Carol Sundberg officiating. Burial will follow at Cedar Park Memorial Cemetery. Nancy Cacera, Iowa City. Nancy Cacera, 87, of Iowa City, passed away on April 2, 2024, at Lantern Park Specialty Care Center in Coralville. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 6, 2024, at Brosh Chapel and the AVA Center in Cedar Rapids, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 6, 2024, at Brosh Chapel, with Very Reverend Father Fred Shaheen presiding. Burial will be in St. George Cemetery, followed by a mercy meal at St. George Orthodox Church. Lucille Rose Koenig, 103, passed away at home on April 1, 2024. She died peacefully with her family at her side. Services will be held at St. Pius at a later date. Roger A. Barr, 85, of Walker, Iowa, died at home Tuesday, April 2, 2024. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 6, 2024, at the First Presbyterian Church in Independence, Iowa. Burial will follow at Fremont Cemetery in Tripola, Iowa. Johnny Vern Thornton, 53, of Robbins, formerly of Monona and Giard, Iowa, died Monday, April 1, 2024, at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Visitation will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, April 5, 2024, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, with a memorial service to immediately follow at 11 a.m. at the funeral home. The family will have a private burial. John Alfred Gudenkoff, 77, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away peacefully at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy on Tuesday, April 2, 2024, with his family at his side. The family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 5, 2024, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, Iowa. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, April 6th at the funeral home with full military honors. A private family burial will be held at a later date at Oak Hill Cemetery in Tama, Iowa. Jane Marie Shantz, 80, of Alburnett, passed away Thursday, March 28, 2024, surrounded by her family. A brief service and celebration of life is planned for April 13, 2024, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Alburnett Christian Church. Jane donated her body to the University of Iowa's Deeded Body Donor Program. A private burial service will be held at a later date. James Thomas McCormick, 52, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Sunday, March 31, 2024. A visitation will be held on Friday, April 5, 2024, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Cedar Memorial West Side Chapel, 1221 First Avenue Southwest, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Colette Janish, age 72, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away on February 12, 2024. A garden party celebration of Colette's life will be held on Saturday, May 4th at 1023 Memorial Drive Southeast Cedar Rapids at 11 a.m. It will be followed by an opportunity for individuals to purchase plants and garden decor to remember her by. A memorial celebration of Colette for friends and family will be held on Saturday, June 1st in Shelter 4 at Token Creek County Park at 11 a.m. Casual dress and well-behaved pets encouraged. Food will be provided after a short service. In sports, high school golf, Solon mainstay Heesh provides stability. Senior will be relied on even more to help round out team scores this season by K.J. Pilcher, The Gazette, Solon. Brennan Heesh is not new to the Solon boys golf lineup. On the contrary, the Solon senior has been a mainstay since its program. He joined the program. Heesh was part of three straight Class 3A state tournament teams. His final campaign will be a little bit different, serving as one of the Spartans' leaders behind All-State performers Isaiah Zosky and Jack McCarty. "I like it more," Heesh said. "There's more pressure to shoot good scores, and I feel like I have shot good scores, like last year when there's more pressure on me. I like it a lot more than not having expectations, really." Heesh has been an important contributor for those successful Spartan teams and will be relied on even more to help round out team scores this season. He helped Solon open the season Monday with a 151-166 dual victory over host Mount Vernon at Carnoustie Golf Club. "He's been a key cog in our teams over the last few years," Solon coach Adam Staley said. "He's going to be a critical for any success that we have this year." He shot 43 in his first round. He averaged 38.29 for 9 holes last season and carded 80.83 per 18 with a 41.02 combined adjusted average, which combines all competition and factors in course difficulty. Staley noted that Heesh can get overshadowed by Zosky's and McCartney's accolades, but he provides stability to the Spartans with his experience. "Heesh has played in stressful competition during major tournaments and knows how to handle it. He leads by example and demonstrates a strong work ethic. He adds that consistency," Staley said. "He's a leader, whether he wants to admit it or not. I know there are a lot of kids that look at him and see what they want to try and get to and emulate his game." He's a very soft-spoken kid. He's not going to be the first to lead the charge and say a lot. He works extremely hard and dedicates a lot of time to it. Much of that time is during the summer. When Heesh is not competing, he can usually be found playing at Lake McBride Golf Course. Golf is a passion for him. "It's something I do a lot," Heesh said. "During the summer, all I'm pretty much doing is golfing. It, time, depends on how busy the course is. If there is no one out there, I'll be playing as long as I want." Heesh set his sights on a specific goal this year. He wants to add all WAMAC conference honors to his resume and is determined to earn multiple medals, team and individual, in all three postseason meets, a feat he managed in sectional and district competition as a junior. "Obviously, the goal is a state championship," Heesh said. "I think we lost a few people, but we definitely have enough good people to get there and win." Also in sports, events of area interest. Boys soccer, Prairie at Jefferson, 4:15 p.m. Iowa City West at Cedar Falls at 5 p.m. Girls soccer, Waterloo West at Linmar, 5:45 p.m. Marion at Solon, 5:30 p.m. Boys tennis, Prairie at Kennedy, 4 p.m. Waverly Shell Rock at Marion, 4 p.m. Dubuque Wallert at Xavier, 4 p.m. Washington at Western Dubuque, 4 p.m. Linmar at Dubuque Hempstead, 4 p.m. City High at Dubuque Senior, 4 p.m. Girls tennis, Kennedy at Prairie, 4 p.m. Western Dubuque at Washington, 4 p.m. Dubuque Hempstead at Linmar, 4 p.m. Dubuque Senior at City High, 4 p.m. Marion at Mount Vernon, 4 p.m. Xavier at Dubuque Wallert, 4 p.m. Girls golf, Jefferson, Linmar, Washington at Xavier, Twin Pines Golf Course, 3:15 p.m. City High, Iowa City West, Liberty at Prairie, Airport National Golf Course, 3:15 p.m. Cedar Falls, Waterloo West at Kennedy, Ellis Golf Course, 3:15 p.m. And in college baseball, UW Platteville at Cornell, 6 p.m. In area bowling, 300 game May City Bowl, David Sieber, Ferguson Enterprises. Cedar Rapids Bowling Center, A.J. Begley, Staff of Life. In leagues, May City Bowl, Who Cares, Tracy McShane, 198 to 498, Jimmy Post, 267, Kyle Foster, 658. Ferguson Enterprises, Tuesday Nighters, Dan Hurst, 772. Cedar Rapids Bowling Center, Battle of the Sexes, Ann Dutmeyer, 246, and 652, Sean Ely, 247, Zach Masterham, 699, Staff of Life, Rob Amers, 787. In Iowa Today, Reynolds sees AEA law as a good start by Aaron Murphy, Gazette, Des Moines Bureau. Recently enacted changes to Iowa's area education agencies, which provide special education services and other supports to public schools, represent a phenomenal place to start, Governor Kim Reynolds said Wednesday. Reynolds earlier this year proposed overhauling the structure and funding of Iowa's nine AEAs, and this past week she signed into law such a proposal, albeit one that was not as sweeping as her original pitch. Area education agencies oversee education of Iowa students with disabilities and offer media and consulting services to schools and students in their boundaries. During news conference Wednesday in the governor's formal office at the Capitol, Reynolds was asked whether she's satisfied with the new AEA bill or whether she will bring another legislative proposal for the 2025 legislative session. "I'm happy with what the bill ended up. Really, it was a phenomenal place to start," Reynolds said. "I thought it was a fair and reasonable place where they ended up." Reynolds said a review of the AEA system was needed and that she found a lack of consistency, transparency, and accountability. "So there is some good places for us to start," Reynolds said, "and this comprehensive bill takes a really promising step forward to start to do all of that." Reynolds says she will continue to speak with public school and AEA leaders moving forward. She said her proposal was never intended to do away with the AEA system, but rather to provide transparency, accountability, consistency, and to improve student outcomes. "We're building relationships and we're understanding additional things that we can look at, like categorical funding, providing more flexibility," Reynolds said. What new law will do? Currently, federal and state special education funding goes directly to the 9 agencies. AEAs also receive property tax funding for media services and other education services for schools in their region. Once the new law is fully implemented in the second year, 10% of state funding for special education services will remain with school districts, while 90% will continue to flow directly to the AEAs. In the second year, all state funding for other educational services and media services will go directly to schools, which could use that money for AEA services or to get them from another entity. The law also creates a division in the Department of Education to provide oversight of special education services provided by the AEAs. In community letters, thanks to the Gazette for Cancer in Iowa series, I wish to express my appreciation to the Gazette for the recent information series on cancer occurrence in Iowa. Among other topics, the series suggests potential environmental causes for the high rate of cancer in Iowa, including agricultural chemicals. I am sure many other readers also appreciated the irony of the half-page ad on page 3 of the section that completed the cancer series, which under the heading Control Weeds, Not Farming, advocated against threats to the use of the number one tool to control weeds, glyphosate. The following day, April 1st, the Gazette published a letter from Kurt Zingula contesting implications in the series that agricultural chemicals might contribute to the cancer risk in Iowa, arguing the series author repeatedly cited studies using correlations. Correlation significantly lacks the respect of causation within the science community. I agree. Correlation is not proof, and simple, direct causes for many complex diseases, including most forms of cancer, are elusive. However, in my many years as a healthcare provider, nearly every patient I saw who had an oral cancer also had one or more risk factors, such as tobacco use, that were well known to be correlated with oral cancer. Mr. Zingula might want to look up a recent Journal of the National Cancer Institute report that describes elevated cancer biomarkers in the urine of people who also showed high glyphosate concentrations. Gary Coleman, Iowa City. 24-hour doorman Todd Dorman. GOP roundup ready to shield companies. There was a curious double feature playing in the Iowa Senate on Tuesday. First, senators approved legislation that would tighten regulation of products containing hemp and THC, the stuff that makes you high. The main target is hemp-infused seltzer drinks. The bill would limit the products to 4 milligrams of THC per serving and 10 milligrams per package. It could have been worse if the Buzzkill Caucus had its way. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican, Council Bluffs, argued the bill is desperately needed regulation, closing a loophole in Iowa's hemp laws. Senator Tom Shipley, Republican, Nottoway, contended businesses are exploiting the loophole with nefarious motives. Sounds dangerous. It passed the Senate 31-18 with most of the no votes coming from Democrats and is headed to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. No one is going to get high on her watch. The Senate turned its attention to legislation granting farm chemical companies legal liability protections against claims the company failed to warn users of health effects, so long as the products carry required EPA labeling. It was approved on a 31-19 vote. The bill was requested by the pharmaceutical and farm chemical giant Bayer. The company bought Monsanto in 2018 for $63 billion, at the time the largest cash-only deal in history, and inherited its most popular product, Roundup. Now Bayer is being pummeled by lawsuits alleging Roundup's weed-killing chemical, glyphosate, causes cancer after prolonged exposure. Iowa would be the first state in the nation to grant Bayer's wish for protection from litigation, including by farmers. The EPA has declared it's unlikely glyphosate causes cancer. Republicans who backed the bill argued it's safe as kittens, and Bayer has no nefarious motives. There is no proven link between glyphosate and cancer, says Senate President Amy Sinclair, delivering a passionate defense for Roundup. It's greedy trial lawyers who are the real problem, driving up the cost of glyphosate. But other research has come to a different conclusion on cancer risk. A University of Washington analysis, for example, found that long-term exposure increases the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. As one defense attorney representing Roundup plaintiffs pointed out in 2020, Bayer makes Roundup while its pharmaceutical division works on a treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Science aside, the most basic issue at play is Iowa's ability to go to court and seek damages from a product they believe harmed them. Why are we eager to hamper those claims to please an international conglomerate? We have judges and juries who are more than capable of rendering a fair verdict. It's hard enough to take on a large corporation without lawmakers putting a thumb on the scales of justice. When Bayer bought Monsanto, it had the help of lawyers from six large law firms to seal the deal. And don't shed a tear for Bayer. It bought Monsanto even after the World Health Organization's International Research Agency on Cancer found that glyphosate is probably carcinogenic to humans. So, hemp drinkers are nefarious. Glyphosate is totally safe. Don't worry. It all makes sense under the golden dome of wisdom. Postpartum Medicaid extension heads to the governor by Caleb McCullough. A bill headed to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk would extend Medicaid postpartum coverage to a year for new mothers who qualify, but it also will remove prenatal and postpartum care for hundreds of other Iowans. House lawmakers passed a bill Wednesday along with a bill altering the rules for an anti-abortion pregnancy support program. The Medicaid bill takes advantage of federal program giving states the option to extend Medicaid coverage from the 60 days currently required by law to 12 months. The option was made available in the 2021 American Rescue Plan Act, and Iowa is one of the last states to enact the extension. The maximum income to qualify for coverage would be lowered, making some women who are currently eligible for Medicaid prenatal care no longer eligible. Iowa currently provides birth and postpartum Medicaid coverage for families making up to 375% of the federal poverty line, the highest eligibility limit in any state. The bill would lower that limit to 215% of the federal poverty line. The new level would cover single mothers making up to $43,900 a year and a family of four making up to $67,100. The change would make Iowa's eligibility limit for prenatal and postpartum care around 13th in the nation. That change would lead to around 1,300 women and 400 infants per month being ineligible for prenatal and postpartum care under Iowa's Medicaid program, according to an analysis from the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. Around 2,700 women who otherwise would have lost postpartum coverage after 2 months now would be eligible for the full 12 months, the agency said. The changes would take place effective January 1. Support, opposition. House lawmakers approved the proposal Wednesday, 70-25. 10 Democrats joined nearly all Republicans in voting for the measure, while one Republican and 24 Democrats voted no. Maternal health care experts have lobbied for years to extend this coverage, saying it will improve health outcomes for women during a vulnerable period and address inequities in health care. Lowering the income eligibility was an attempt to keep the program cost neutral while providing more coverage for lower-income Iowans, Republicans said. The changes also expected to cost the state around $6 million over the next 3 years, including one-time IT costs and an increase in infants moving from Medicaid to the Healthy and Well Kids of Iowa program. Democrats said they want to keep the current eligibility limit for pregnancy care under Medicaid while extending coverage to 12 months, arguing the state has the funds to cover everyone. But an amendment to that effect was voted down by Republicans. Extending the coverage at the current eligibility level would cost about $14 million over 4 years, according to the bill's proposal during the last legislative session. Bills like this do not make Iowa a welcoming state, Representative Sharon Sue Steckman, Democrat Mason City, said. We're going to go to the bottom of the pile again. Republican Representative Devon Woods of New Market, who managed the bill, said it will give vital help to low-income Iowans who need it the most, giving them 10 more months of coverage than they have now. Moms Program. House lawmakers also passed a bill Wednesday to allow the State Department of Health and Human Services to independently administer a program set up to fund anti-abortion pregnancy support centers. The More Options for Maternal Support program has created by lawmakers was created by lawmakers in 2022, but Health and Human Services has failed to find an administrator for the program after multiple bid opportunities. Lawmakers hope the legislation will get the program up and running. In the Capitol Notebook, House passes bill to ban misleading alternative meat and egg products. The Gazette, Lee, Des Moines Bureau. Food processing plants would be prohibited from labeling plant-based meat alternatives or lab-grown meat as meat under a bill passed Wednesday by Iowa state lawmakers. The bill, Senate File 2391, would allow the State Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing to create rules and impose civil penalties on plants that mislabel non-meat foods. It also would create similar restrictions for egg alternatives and prohibit Iowans on food assistance programs like NSAP from purchasing egg alternatives. Iowa House Republicans said the bill would promote transparency in food production and help Iowa's meat and agricultural industry. Representative Norlin Momsen, a farmer from DeWitt, said plant-based meat companies are trying to live off the coattails of farmers. The intent of this bill is to make sure that we recognize the effort that has been put forth to create that quality product, he said. The bill was amended Wednesday to include references to egg alternatives and remove the ability of people on federal food assistance programs to buy egg substitutes, promoting protest from the House Democrats. The bill would require that the state submit a waiver request to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to exclude egg substitute products from the assistance programs. Democrats said they had no problem with requiring accurate labeling, but that removing the ability of Iowans with allergies to buy a food item was overly restrictive. I don't believe it's the right path to go down for the government to mandate what people using SNAP and WIC cannot or can eat, said Representative J.D. Scholten, Democrat, Sioux City. With a party-line vote, House Republicans sent the bill back to the Senate. The chamber will need to agree to an amended bill to send it on to Governor Kim Reynolds. Vape regulations. Nicotine vapes that are not approved by the FDA or on a waiting list to be approved would be banned from sale in Iowa under a bill advanced by House lawmakers. The bill, which is opposed by retail vape shops, would outlaw a significant portion of the products on the shelves at vape shops, many of which are not regulated and are imported from countries like China. House lawmakers said the proposal would improve Iowans' health and help lower rates of youth vaping. Representative Brent Segrist, Republican, Council Bluffs, said the bill would ensure that products are regulated and follow Food and Drug Administration guidelines. The bill passed the House 90-4. It is eligible for consideration in the Senate, where it was passed out of a committee in February. Gadsden flag. Legislation that would allow Iowa drivers to order a license plate design featuring the yellow Don't Tread on Me Gadsden flag, with some of the revenue going to fund gun rights education sponsored by groups associated with the National Rifle Association, continues to advance in the Senate. The proposal would generate a projected $158,000 in each of the first 2 years for the Keep and Bear Arms program, according to the state's nonpartisan legislative services agency. The bill, House File 2639, previously passed the House on a party-line vote with Republican support. On Wednesday, it advanced out of the Senate's Tax Policy Committee again, with only Republican support. It is now eligible for consideration by the full Senate. Senator Bill Dotzler, Democrat, Waterloo, said he does not take issue with specialized license plate fees funding a gun education program, but suggested the funding should go to an organization other than the NRA, which filed for bankruptcy in 2021. Kevin Reynolds' health. Iowa's first gentleman, Kevin Reynolds, the husband of Governor Kim Reynolds, who last year was diagnosed with lung cancer, is doing well, the governor said. The governor announced her husband's diagnosis last September. In October, the governor said radiation treatments and an oral immune therapy drug were having positive impacts on the tumor and Kevin's pain. Asked Wednesday about her husband, Kim Reynolds said he is doing really, really well and recently snuck out for a hunting trip, which she considered a good sign. Lyon confirmed. Kayla Lyon, who has been serving as director of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources since 2019, has been reconfirmed by the Senate. Lyon, the first female DNR director, was reconfirmed on a 40-9 vote. She is a former legislative liaison and advisor on agricultural and natural resources to Governor Kim Reynolds. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.